fellow podcast listeners, I stand before you today to bring you a message. Now is a time for hope. Now is a time for change. Now is the chance to make a difference. Don't just sit lazily by your computer. Stand up. Now sit back down. Pull out a pad and a pencil and write this down. You, too, can make a difference in this changing world. If you think you have what it takes, visit the USGS employment website at usgs.gov/jobs. There you'll find options for employment, internships, student positions, and more. So show us what you have. Join the USGS today. Thank you.
The USGS Corecast approves this message.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the USGS Corecast, episode 24 for December 2007. I'm Steve Sobieszczyk. Well, December is almost over, and so is the year 2007. Before this year ends, we wanted to give our loyal listeners at least one more taste of the USGS Corecast. And rather than do one of the year-end recap type of shows, we decided to stick to our normal schedule and give you fresh new Corecastic content. Today's show will focus on the impact of dam removal on the downstream ecology and fluvial geomorphology of rivers. Now, there are two things I'd like to make clear before we begin. First, the topic of dams and dam removal is somewhat controversial. To keep this episode somewhat lighthearted yet informative, we're going to strictly focus on one dam in particular, and that's the Marmot Dam out here in Oregon. The second thing I wanted to mention is we are fully aware that the word dam is a double entendre. Believe it or not, we are professionals here, so we'll do our best to keep this dam podcast professional. So, let me give you a little background on this Marmot Dam that we're talking about. The Marmot Dam was located along the Sandy River, which is a major tributary to the Columbia River east of Portland, Oregon. The dam stood originally at 47 feet high. It was constructed between 1906 to 1913 and produced about 22 megawatts of power. The actual decommission and destruction cost about $17 million. The dam was removed primarily because of it wasn't economically feasible anymore. It was an old dam, new restrictions, retrofitting, all that. It wasn't really cost-effective to keep it. Also, by removing it, they were able to restore an old salmon run up the Sandy River, as well as offer new recreation possibilities for kayakers, canoers, and fishermen. The good news is, now, for the first time in almost 100 years, the Sandy River runs of salmon can now go unimpeded from the base of Mount Hood, through the Sandy, through the Columbia, to the Pacific Ocean. That's probably enough introduction, so without further ado, I'd like to introduce today's guests. I'm joined by two very well-respected geomorphologists, Jim O'Connor and John Major. Jim has been studying fluvial geomorphology for about 20 years now, including research on flooding and river systems. John is a geomorphologist as well, although his research is primarily looking at large-scale sediment transport associated with volcanic eruptions. I'd like to thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Steve.
Oh, thanks, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
First off, Jim, would you like to describe a little bit about what the conditions were like and what the concerns were prior to the Marmot Dam coming out?
So in the years leading up to the decision as to whether or not to take Marmot Dam out, there were several concerns. And one of the major issues, of course, was the sediment that had accumulated behind Marmot Dam. The 50-foot dam was completely filled with sediment behind it, with perhaps about a million cubic yards. And the concern was what would happen after the dam was taken out and that sediment started to work its way down the river system.
Can you walk us through the chronology of the actual dam removal process?
The first real discussions about removing this dam began in 1999 when Portland General Electric was faced with a decision about whether it was in their best interest to try to retrofit the dam to improve fish passage. In 2002, the final decision was made that the dam would come out. In the end, the dam was taken out in a couple different steps. In July of this year, a cofferdam was built about 100 yards upstream from the concrete structure, and that allowed the river to be diverted around the original Marmot Dam so that they could excavate some of the sediment adjacent to the dam and then blow up and take out the concrete structure. Now, this diversion could only handle about 2,000 cubic feet per second of water going around the dam. So they recognized that at the first large flow of fall, that their diversion would not fully function and that the earthen dam would breach.
Just to add to that a little bit, Steve, in anticipation then of this sort of threshold discharge that PGE was looking for in order to kind of initiate the breach of this cofferdam, us at the USGS and colleagues down at universities and with other federal agencies, we really tried to put together a plan of how to watch and how to take advantage of this breach for scientific purposes. And so, for example, we set up a network of cameras around the reservoir to try to capture the breach from different angles. We had people manning a station several hundred yards downstream of the dam where they were going to measure the water discharge and the sediment discharge as it came by. We had another team that was upstream of the dam to measure the water discharge and sediment discharge coming down the Sandy River above the dam to give us some insights on kind of the background level that was coming in so we could compare what was coming out with what was coming in. We're really looking forward to assimilating all the results that we've been getting to date, but we put a lot of effort and planning into this, and we're trying to really take advantage of this grand experiment that nature and man have kind of set up and executed for us.
Now that we have a feeling for the preparation for studying the dam removal, let's fast forward to the breach. How long did it take for the river to breach the cofferdam, and how did the trapped sediment respond?
The flow breached down through the dam very quickly. In half an hour or so, the river had incised almost all the way through the dam. And the nick point that formed upstream moved upstream quite rapidly. And the volume of sediment that was evacuated from the reservoir, I think, exceeded pretty much everybody's expectations. Downstream, all that sediment ended up raising the riverbed. At our cableway site, which was just a couple tenths of a mile downstream from the breach, the bed came up 14 or so feet over the course of the weekend, and the depositional wedge that resulted extended nearly half a mile downstream.
And what's really been interesting is going back and looking at the photography we have, the photography really does show that probably within 4 hours of the breach, and certainly within five or six, the dam was essentially gone. So the river rapidly eroded the dam away, and then all that sediment that was behind the dam was also being very rapidly eroded. At this point, it started to deposit a lot of that sediment just immediately downstream of the dam, but it was also sweeping a lot of that sediment downstream. And the people that we had at the gauging station, a few hundred yards downstream, measured quite a nice spike in the sediment load and the kind of the water discharge that came sweeping by that station.
And my last question, how long will it take for the sediment to make its way through the system and for the river to actually return to a pre-dam equilibrium?
That's the $64,000 question, and it's exactly what makes this experiment so exciting. We really don't know. We're continuing to go out there and measure. We're measuring bed load and suspended load transport, and we're be going back out there in the summer and resurveying cross sections. But that's a question that everybody is wondering about, and it's one that's certainly going to be relevant to future dam removals as they occur.
Jim sort of took the words out of my mouth. That really is the $64,000 question, and it's the one that's foremost on everyone's mind. From my perspective, I can offer perhaps a little bit of insight based on some of the work we've done at Mount St. Helens, looking at how those river systems up there have kind of flushed out and processed a lot of the sediment that's been deposited in the river valleys as a result of the large eruption in 1980. Those channels had a lot more sediment deposited in them than what is stored behind this dam. But in a few of those channels, it was surprising how rapidly they actually move sediment out of the system. They move tremendous amounts of sediment out of their systems within 3 to 4 years. But there are still channels in the upstream areas where there was a lot of sediment deposited. The amount of sediment that's being transported down those systems is still anywhere from 10 to 100 times above sort of what we would consider typical background level. So my guess is that for a system like this, I wouldn't be surprised if we still see lingering effects of this sediment that was stored behind the dam a couple of years down the road.
Okay, thank you guys for joining me. That's all the questions I have for today.
Thanks, Steve.
Oh, you're welcome, Steve.
As I mentioned before, if you'd like to learn more about the Marmot Dam removal, you can head over to the Marmot Dam website, the USGS Marmot Dam website, or the PGE Sandy River Watershed website, all of which are listed in our show notes. If you're more interested in general discussion about what the politics, policies, research, and discussion are concerning removing dams, the University of California has a nice website. It's a clearinghouse for dam removal information. Lastly, if you think you have what it takes to decide the fate of a dam, check out the PBS Dam Challenge, where you decide the best solution to a dam problem. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. As usual, if you want to reach us, you can do so via email. Our address is corecast@usgs.gov. We hope you all have a very safe and happy New Year's, and we'll see you next year. The Corecast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior. I'm Steve Sobieszczyk. Until next time, rock on!